I want to bring you a spiritual path that is based on Tibetan Buddhism, that is based on Buddhism. So what I'm not going to try to bring you is Buddhism from Tibet. I'm going to try to bring you Buddhism, full stop. And I'm even going to try to mold that Buddhism to a way and to a method that it fits all our lives, that all of you do not need to be Buddhists. All of you do not need to say, I'm a Buddhist, or convert, or make all those official proclamations, and I'm baptized, I'm changed, I'm saved. It's not necessary. What we're going to do is we're going to learn a spiritual path. And a spiritual path can be embodied by all of us. It can be practiced by all of us. And we can put it into our lives. We can apply it to our lives, whether we're Buddhist, whether we're Jews, we're Hindus, we're Sikhs, we're Muslims, we're Christians, or free thinkers. This is not a class, or this is not a center, or I'm not a teacher that tries to make you a Buddhist. What happens is, this is wonderful. We can all be together here, and we don't have to join to be a Buddhist. Let's learn together. Some weeks we get together, it's going to be totally boring. You're going to be bored, silly, doesn't apply, but have compassion because it can apply to the person next to you. Some weeks you get together, it's going to totally apply. Sometimes you're going to come here happy, sometimes you come here unhappy. Whatever it is, we learn a way to become happy. And then we might look next to us, we might see somebody weird, act weird, talk weird, do things weird. I mean, they're all around us. And you shouldn't freak out, you shouldn't think, well, this is a Buddhist little organization, and they should be all like walking around on clouds, and they all should look like Kuan Yin. No. If you all look like Kuan Yin and act like Kuan Yin, you all don't need to be here. You're being in a cloud somewhere or hanging out in a temple waiting for your ang bao. That's what I'll do if I'm Kuan Yin, wait for my ang bao, right? But in a hospital, why are you surprised when people are sick? When you're in a hospital, when you go in there and everybody's sick, you shouldn't be surprised. It's a hospital. So when you go to a Dharma center, what are we healing? Our spiritual sickness. What is our spiritual sickness? Our spiritual sickness is waking up in the morning and asking ourselves every single day of our lives as we get older, what's the purpose of life? Why am I doing all this? Why am I eating? Why am I dieting? Why am I making money? Why am I looking great? Why am I trying to look great? Why am I just living? Why am I here? Every single day, and that question gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and it becomes more annoying. It creates more dissatisfaction. It creates a lot of frustration and more anger as time goes on. And then when you finally reach an age where you don't care why you're here, you just hope that you can stay here. You hope when you wake up, you're just happy you wake up in the morning. You know, I'm reaching that stage because the sun's starting to set for me. In any case, my point is this. Our little group here is for learning something of a spiritual path. And spiritual path doesn't mean Buddhist spiritualism. It means spiritual, going back to the spirit, going back to our mind. When we talk about spiritualism, it's something about the mind. It's something about making the mind a better individual, a better person. That's what it's about. It's not about mantras and rituals and exotic, you know, lamas and names and titles and exotic magic shows. So what I want is I want to share a type of dharma to all of you, as I mentioned before, who are intelligent, who are educated, who are modern, and who have very little time because you have a lot of responsibilities. We may think that this is a modern time and we have a lot of freedom and flexibility. Actually, no. It's a Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga meaning the time of degeneration, where all things that support life become an obstacle for life. All things that support life become something that creates more time-consuming space. It takes up more and more time. We think a car is more convenient. Actually, when we get a car, it takes up more time. It takes up more energy, it takes up more responsibility, but it has its great benefits. So some people go into this thing about buying more and more cars, bigger cars, nicer cars, and wanting to have beautiful cars, and wanting to be in a beautiful car, and they're attached to beautiful cars. And in fact, that car is supposed to be very convenient for them, but in fact, it creates suffering for them. My father was like that. Well, not my real father, my stepfather. I realized that when I was young. Every 2-3 years, he'd buy a new car so he can look good in it. He wanted status. So it didn't work. And in fact, a car can become a source of great suffering for us. So we look good in it for a few minutes. People say we drive in the Merce or whatever. But in the end, it becomes a source of pain, fear of it being stolen, fear of it having an accident, fear of maintaining it with petrol, etc., fear of it being a liability on wheels, then we have to work very hard to make the payments, insurance. It just becomes, we start working for the car. The car doesn't work for us. Similarly, with a boyfriend, with a girlfriend. Similarly, with attachment to clothes. Similarly, with attachment to money and business. Similarly, with attachment to jewelry, etc., etc., etc. There are many, many teachers that's emanated in the world and appeared in the world in the past. For us to be so arrogant to think that Lord Buddha is the most superior out of all of them, or Lord Buddha is the only one, Lord Buddha is the only savior, and Lord Buddha is the only way, is completely wrong. I don't agree. Buddhism doesn't agree. And if you're any real Buddhists, do not agree. He is one of the many teachers that have appeared in this planet. And there are many places that appear that have given talks that have, out of compassion and motivated by love, to help, to assist, have given teachings, Dharma teachings. Dharma teachings means correct conduct. It's a Sanskrit word relating to correct conduct. When you say Dharma, they associate it with Buddhism, all right, but actually it's Dharma is a Sanskrit word meaning correct conduct. So we've had many, many teachers in the past, and I don't have to repeat myself, you guys all know. And these teachers come out of compassion with no motive for themselves in order to share with us knowledge that is all around us. And sometimes when it's so obvious, we just don't see it. We just cannot see it in front of us. They're not teaching you anything new. They're not teaching anything you might not have seen or recognized. They're letting you recognize something that might be in front of you. That's why Jesus always said to his disciples, the kingdom of heaven is before you. The kingdom of heaven is right in front of you. And the people are like, where? I wasn't one of those people. But anyways, I was having popcorn in the back. Anyways, right in front of you. And Buddha says we all have our Buddha nature. The Buddha nature is within us. Then you have these weird Westerners I've met in the past in America that say to me, you know, you can't do that to me because there's a Buddha inside of me. I'm like, yeah, there's a Buddha in front of you, inside of you. Where it is, where the sun don't shine. But anyway, I thought that, I didn't say that. Lord Buddha gave the teachings 2,500 years ago approximately. He set it in motion. He spoke 84,000 volumes. And during that time, he had many, many attained students. Many, many attained disciples. Arhats, etc. Like Shariputra, Moggallaya, etc. And they had achieved perfect memory. Perfect memory. Where they can recite verbatim everything Buddha had taught. Perfection of memory. And there are people like that today who have photographic memory. So it's nothing unusual. It's something you can develop. So what happens is, it was only 500 years later, after Lord Buddha's parinirvana or death, that the disintegration or the lessening of people with perfect memory practice were becoming less and less and less. They were becoming less, people with perfect memory. And so what happened was, they had a council, they had a meeting, they decided to record down all of Buddha's holy teachings. And those teachings were recorded in a great council of great arhats and masters and living great holders of the lineage of the Lord Buddha at that time, 500 years after Lord Buddha passed away. And they recorded teachings, and the teachings were recorded down, and they're called the Kangyur, the spoken words of the Buddha. 108 volumes, very thick, big books. So Buddha didn't hang around and just, you know, run around, look for free offerings and pretend he was meditating. He actually did a lot of work during his lifetime. I mean, you have to remember, no emails, no internet, no telephones, no, not much paper. You know, we couldn't go to Jaijasco and buy a nice flare pen, no PDAs, no laptops to record the teachings and all that stuff. Nothing. All they had was their ears and a little shelter over their heads, and they listened to Lord Buddha teach. And they attained great heights. Look at us, we're inside a building, aircon, fans, drinks. Well, I have a drink. And we don't cheat much. So it's the human spirit and effort, it counts a lot. In any case, these holy teachings have been passed down. And as they pass down, they're written. When they're written, they're like school books. You need a teacher to explain to you, to share with you, to go along and tell you what's going on, to explain through experience, hopefully through meditational experience, if not, at least through commentarial explanation, which means that the teacher himself or herself has listened to these set of teachings many times in the past from great erudite masters with a lineage, and they're able to pass these teachings down to you down to you as they have heard it. Best would be both. Experiential, which means it comes from their experience, and commentary, which means they've received commentary. So it's a lot of time spent to listen to the teachings in order to pass the teachings. A lot of time spent, a lot of sacrifice put toward that direction. In any case, we need to meet that type of guru who's skilled in sutra and tantra, who's skilled in 108 volumes of Buddha's teachings. We need to find a teacher that's attained, who has bodhicitta, the realization of shunyata, has skillful means, is unmoving in the mind, and in fact, a living Buddha. Those teachers do exist. Those teachers are around us. Those teachers are present. People who have infinite wisdom, infinite compassion, infinite knowledge, and they prove it by their work. The result of your life and what you have around you and what you do is a very clear indication of who you are. What you have, how you dress, how you live, your friends, what you eat, your physical body, is a clear reflection of what your mind is focused on, what your mind is into, and what your mind actually likes. We can tell people this and that and that and this and this and this. We can tell anybody anything we like, and we may see them once in a blue moon, they might believe us, but anybody with wisdom can look at a person, their body, their speech, and their mind. They can look at their surroundings, what they carry, how they move, how they walk, to get an experience or get an idea of what's inside their mind and what's their focus. It's very, very clear. Very, very clear. So what we are interested in is reflected in the things around us and what we do, and in fact, our activities. And in some cases, not everybody, in the jobs that we do, the jobs that we like, the jobs that we are attracted to, the kind of jobs we like is a reflection of the state of our mind. In any case, the point is you need someone to guide you. You need someone to take you there to show you. And that's what a spiritual teacher is all about. Guru literally refers to people who are attained, who have controlled their anger, who have controlled their desires, their hatred, and their negative emotions. And they abide mostly in compassion, skillful means, and the wish to benefit you. And they are very skilled in sutra and tantra. And they're solely motivated to benefit you. That's a definition, a very quick definition of a guru. Definitely, 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 I do not fit into that category. But there are people out there, like His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, the great Karmapa, the Panchen Lamas, the Pope. I respect him very much, as I told many of you many years ago in the States when he was shot and he was put in a hospital. He kept saying to please forgive the other person, don't indict him, don't press charges. Over and over again, we saw it on TV, I was very impressed. Mother Teresa, people like Mahatma Gandhi who practiced peace and ahimsa his whole life. When they shot him, the last thing he said was, I forgive you, my brother. Oh, I forgive you. Was it my son or my brother? Something about I forgive you. And that reflects the sum of their life, which is compassion. They have used this planet and its resources in a way that it benefits others, not benefiting themselves. So what am I trying to say? We need those people are qualified to be spiritual gurus. And if you come across that, you must collect a great amount of merits. You must have done great meditations, held on to your practices, kept your guru commitments and samayas, not breaking your samayas at all, purified your karma and attained some level to come close to those kind of gurus who in one lifetime can bring you to enlightenment. I'm not saying that I'm such a great person that I've gotten that, but I've come across 13 great masters of that nature, very, very great, that are all from Tibet, that are very elderly lamas. Some have already passed away. I've come across that and I've seen what a real guru is. So when I come to Malaysia and I give Dharma teachings and people refer to me as guru, it actually takes me aback. It makes me, not offended, it makes me feel very embarrassed, very sad, and I would like to change that around and not be referred to as a guru, but as a spiritual friend. Because I do not have the qualifications of guru, far from it. But I've sat under holy gurus, and since you and I don't have the karma at this moment to be near the real gurus, well, let me help you prepare. Let me give you the Dharma talks and teachings for the next few years, next few lifetimes, to prepare to come across the real gurus. Now, in this time and age, to meet a guru of that perfection is very, very rare. Very rare. One is the causes and conditions must be there for these great masters to manifest. And sometimes these great masters, although perfect by nature, may manifest in imperfect situations. Why? Because of our karmic limitations. Example, Lord Buddha had to defecate, had to urinate, got sick, manifested illness, manifested old age. But how can a Buddha who is free of all negative karma have pain, old age, and death? The very reason he practiced for three countless aeons. How can the Son of God, Jesus Christ, and I don't take that in a literal sense, a manifestation of enlightened being, have pain? It's impossible. So, what happens is this. These incredible beings manifest in an ordinary form, using ordinary bodies, using ordinary elements, air, water, fire, and etc. So they fail from time to time, thereby experiencing sickness and old age and all that. But their minds are infinite. Lama Tsongkhapa is pure. Lama Tsongkhapa is enlightened. His image can become black, it can be tarnished, it can be dark, it can become moldy, but it doesn't mean Lama Tsongkhapa becomes moldy. Similarly, we want a teacher for what? In this day and age, to find the perfect teacher is very hard, mostly due to our lack of good merits and the lack of causes we created to meet these great teachers. And sometimes even when we come across these great teachers, all we see is imperfections and faults. And sometimes we can even mock them, think nasty things and negative things. Sometimes we can even fight them, stay away from them, or not do any Dharma practice, because all we see is negativity among them, within them. And we have to think deeper, is the negativity in them or with us? Because if the negativity is the outer object, then everybody must see that object as negative. If the outer object is positive, then everybody must see it as positive. So if some people see the object as positive, some see it as negative, it cannot be the object, the perceived object. It must be the perceiver. They themselves are at fault. So if your guru is at fault, everybody must see your guru at fault. So whenever you tell your people, oh, my guru did this and this and this and this, everybody say, oh, yes, yes, you're right. Let's get him. But if people tell you, no, it's not like that, it's like this, and you continue to fight or argue or debate, it's not about who's right and wrong, it's about you not letting go of who you really don't want to face, what you are or what you've become at this time. What you've become and what you are and what you're letting yourself become. You're embarrassed. You feel unhappy. You feel frustrated. You don't want to face it. So when you don't want to face it, your guru embodies all that you're able to achieve. And since you're not working towards that path, if you see your teacher, you'll see imperfections. Why? Because your teacher will represent those perfections you're trying to achieve towards. As I said before, no one can make you feel guilty unless you've done something wrong. If you've done something wrong, then everything and everyone and every situation will make you feel guilty. Any reminders? Why? You've done something. If you haven't done anything, you wouldn't feel guilty. And to say I feel guilty and stay that way, that's ridiculous also. Due to remedial practices, the remedy practices. If you have a teacher that actually is kind enough to show you anger, if you have a teacher that's kind enough to scold you and tell you off and to correct you, you should feel very fortunate. We say we are ready for spiritual practice. We say we are ready for Dharma practice. We say we are ready to change and improve ourselves. And when we make our Dharma practice our priority, and Dharma practice doesn't mean prayers and meditation and chanting and sadhanas and mantras and altars and making offerings. Dharma practice means what? Transformation of ourself and anything that goes into transforming ourselves. When we make that our priority, and it makes it above everything, it shows you that we are really willing to do something about our lives, about ourselves, and our situation. When we make partying, sleeping, eating, making money, doing business, fun, games, movies, a priority over Dharma, it reflects where our mind is. When our main scope is making money, and we can skip our prayers, we can skip our offerings, we can skip our Dharma classes, for everything and anything, except emergencies, of course. It shows where our priorities actually are. That everything else is priority, Dharma is on the back burner. What's happened is you shouldn't be embarrassed or feel bad or feel negative. No one can make you feel that. What happens is that you go away from who you really can be, because Dharma teaches you who you are. Having a Dharma teacher or taking a Dharma teacher is, what it is this. There's an inner and outer guru. There's a secret guru. The outer guru, or the outer teacher, is the person in front of you, lecturing to you, teaching to you, and compassionately revealing the Dharma to you. That is the outer guru. The inner guru is the transformation of your mind. The inner guru is who you really are. Who we really are is that we are nice people. We are kind people. When we see people getting shot, hurt, mugged, raped, robbed, snatched thieves, when we hear disasters, tornadoes, when we hear people dying, we feel scared and sad. And we pray and we try to help them. That's who we really are inside. And we want to relieve the compassion of others. Who we really are inside are good, honest, wholesome individuals. And sometimes we stray. So Buddhism doesn't teach you to be something you are not or change you to what you are not. Buddhism is focusing you back to who you really are inside. An unselfish person who thinks about others' welfare. And then the secret guru inside is what? The secret guru is the elimination of the self-cherishing mind. When the self-cherishing mind and all its traces are completely eliminated, that is the secret guru. Why? Then you are in a position to guide yourself, to guide others, to help others, to be a benefit to others. You have achieved the secret guru. The secret guru is dependent on the inner guru. The inner guru is dependent on the outer guru. Why? The secret guru is destruction of the self-cherishing mind, which is the epitome or the greatest or the goal of Buddhistic practice or any spiritual practice of any spiritual tradition, actually speaking, if you think about it carefully. Then, to achieve that, you must achieve the inner guru. The inner guru is compassion, effort, patience, wisdom, concentration. And that is to be achieved by listening to the outer guru, which is the person that's in front of you, that you've chosen to be your spiritual teacher. You've chosen. That person does his best or her best to share with you and to reveal to you the path of how to find yourself and who you are. A sect of Buddhism, self-realizers that don't need gurus, and they go and they practice on their own, they read, they study, they practice on their own. You can do that too, but you can only reach a certain level. Because afterwards, you need experience. You need someone to teach you from experience, from the meditational experience. You can't become a fully enlightened being through that method, all right? Anyway, a teacher helps you to find yourself and who you are and what you are by teaching you the Dharma. To skillfully examine you, to look at your level, to see your notions, your delusions, your illusions, where you are, what you're about. And it doesn't mean that the teacher is above you. It may mean that he has the same delusions, illusions, and all those notions, and he's overcome some of them, and he's still trying to overcome some others, and therefore he can help you. Think of this as AA. Hi, I have a big ego. My name is Tsen Rinpoche. Hi, Rinpoche. You know, we can do one of those things. A self-help group. That's what we are. We're a self-help group. Why do you want to be here? Well, I'm tired of samsara and I want to be enlightened. Welcome to the group, and we can support each other. So just think of me as a spokesperson for SE, self-enlightenment. Now, when we find when we look for a guru, we must check that guru out. We must make sure that that teacher has the correct lineage. And in order to find a teacher with all the qualifications that I mentioned in 50 stanzas of guru devotion, which you guys are in the process of studying at this time, to find a guru of that kind of perfection, you must be a student with that kind of qualities to attract that kind of teacher. If you are not a student of that quality, and you don't achieve a teacher of that quality, or you achieve a teacher of that quality, but you're not qualified to practice for any reasons, that's where you are. That's why all of you guys are here. I told you, we're the leftovers. Me too. So, a teacher in this day and age must have compassion. Male or female, doesn't matter. Must have compassion. Must have enthusiastic perseverance to teach you the Dharma in any way, shape, or form, any method, any time. It doesn't have to be on the throne in a Dharma hall. It could be just having coffee with you and teaching you something. It could be scolding you. It could be sending you an SMS. It could be anything. But he must have, he or she, let me just say he for easier reference, all right? Sorry if any of you are feminists. I study feminism. Feminism, I love it. And half the Tibetan gods are female, all right? And I come from a female. Yes, some of you think I was born from a lotus. Sorry to break your conception. I'm not the lotus born. Must have enthusiasm, perseverance to teach you the Dharma. Must have compassion and skillful means to convey the Dharma to you. Those are very basic qualifications. And must have a correct lineage, which means study under correct teachers that have a lineage. And they have a lineage. What is a lineage? Is that they can name their teachers. They can name their teachers. They can name their teachers. And these teachers go stem back to Lord Buddha himself. If he says, oh, you know, I had a vision. You know, I had a vision and I was taught this. And I'm going to teach you guys this. Be careful. Because they may have had a vision. They may have not had a vision. You are not, we are not, I am not in a position to check whether they had a vision or not. But if they tell you, hey, I learned this from Krishnamurti. Hey, I learned this from Mother Teresa. Hey, I learned this from Dalai Lama. You can pretty much say, okay, that sounds cool. Because why? These people have shown some quality in them of compassion and skill and benefiting others. Their lives were lived along that way. If this guy says, I hung around Nelson Mandela my whole life and he taught me how to have inner peace and not to be angry with my afflictors and people who damaged me, you can pretty much study under him because you know that's what he went through. But if you have this weirdo from Tibet wearing funny yellow clothes, carrying dogs and telling you he had visions, be careful. Self-incriminating. So what am I trying to say? The person must have a lineage. What's the lineage? They must have a teacher, and they must tell you the teacher. And when they give you a particular set of teachings, a particular set, not a general one, they must tell you where it comes from, who it comes from, and if they can, the time and date. If not time and date, it's okay. Where it comes from must be valid. And if they're teaching from a text, a Dharma text, the text must have a valid teacher. That must have validity. It can't just be something they made up. Why? You have one life. You have one mind. You follow the wrong person, you do the wrong thing, you can mess up your spirituality for the rest of your life. So, the teacher must have a lineage, number one. Number two, the teacher must have compassion. Meaning, they care about you. They care. Compassion means what? That they never get angry, no. That they don't scold you, no. That they care about you. That they're concerned about you. And you can feel it. And that's individualistic. That's individualistic. You're not stupid. A dog can feel you have compassion. If you're nice to a dog, they see you, dogs can feel it. You go near them, they can wave their tails. If they don't like it, they bark. One of my friends, she's rather large, and her nickname starts with S-M-O-O, came near my dog, it barked. Wow! Don't know why. Some other people, my dog sniff at them. Doesn't play with you, just sniffs them and looks at them. Because I sniffed and looked at them too, scratch and sniff, and let me tell you, I don't scratch and sniff anymore. So, they must care about you. These teachers must care. They must really care about you and not using you and exploiting you, but helping you. A teacher that scolds you, a teacher that is crude and tells you off and does these things to you, it must be care. Because you can look at yourselves and say, hey, am I pumping in $3 million in his bank account a year? Am I giving him 20 massages a day? Am I providing him with the greatest girls from Bangkok? Am I giving him airfare all over the world? Am I doing that? Or I show up once in a blue moon in teachings. He still gives me gifts. Or is it that whenever he sees me, he gives me things or teaches me? Or does he scold me when I'm doing the wrong thing? Does he call me? Does he write letters? Does he tell other students to keep in contact with you? Does he do that? If he does that, it means he cares. And you need to find a teacher that cares about you. The first human quality, care. As simple as that. So the benefits of running around with a schmuck teacher is that you can get close with them and they can care. When you're running around with the Dalai Lama, high lamas like that, because they have thousands and hundreds and thousands of students, it's impossible for them to care for every single person physically one by one. But they do care. I've met them. When you go near them, you cry. I cry. When you come across a teacher that cares and has skillful means, he has many ways and methods to bring you the message. What message? The message of how to be who you really are. What's that to give you the Dharma? And they continuously care. Some people make a joke of it. You know, oh, if I do this and this and this, I'll just be ignored for the next 3 months. Never mind. You may think it's a joke, but think deeper. Yes, you will be ignored for the next month, 2 months, 1 week, 2 weeks. But at the end of that light, you know that they will still love you. And they still love you. Whereas outside people who don't care and have compassion, when they ignore you and they get you. There's a difference. There's a huge difference. Compassion. One. Two. Skillful means. Any way, shape, or form, by gifts, by speech, by example, by teaching, clowning around, playing with you, going out with you, sleeping with you, in any way, shape, or form, they will use their body, speech, and mind to bring you to the Dharma, to make you happy. Third, they have a correct transmissional lineage. They actually have teachers that they can tell you they've sat under proof of it. And they have received the blessings, the oral transmissions, the initiations, and the lineages, and the commentaries to pass to you. Because within those lineage contains the blessings of Lord Buddha's holy speech. And when they pass over the teachings to you through them, they are holy or not, it doesn't matter. They are like the cloth that carries something holy. And that's passed on. So the holy teachings of Lord Buddha has very powerful blessings. That's passed on from one teacher to another teacher, and that bond is linked by samaya, guru samaya, guru disciple samaya. When that samaya is broken, that blessing cannot go in. It's like covering up the container that it can pour into. And the longer we delay in repairing that samaya, it throws us away from finding who we are, and it makes us become who we really are not. And we're not happy. And any reminders of that, what we're doing makes us feel guilty. So we consequently stay away from our students, our friends, our people who go to our gurus or any Dharma books or anything. Why? Because we don't want to be reminded of what we're doing, and we don't have the courage to do the right thing. How do you get that courage? You just do it. You just say, hey, let's not talk about right and wrong. Let's just do it. Why? Because ultimately you get more from your guru than you give. Care, love, and the method to become enlightened. And I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about any guru you might have. Some of you are, I'm not your guru, and I don't want to be your guru when I look at you guys. And I'm sure you don't want me to be your guru. If you come across that kind of teacher, you examined, and you look, you don't just fall at their feet and they say, oh God, His Holiness Tsen Rinpoche. His Holiness Tsen Rinpoche, the 15th incarnation. And his first incarnation was the Dalai Lama's personal assistant. His first incarnation was Buddha Shakyamuni's right-hand man. And I'm going to study under him. He's great, and he wears great robes. He's got a great hat, and you know, he's got a lot of entourage. He's got a great temple. I'm going to follow him because it looks cool. Stupid. You don't check out the person for what they have and what they are and where they stay. You check out the person that they have compassion, wisdom, and they have a true lineage. I'd rather hang out in the forest with some simple monk who doesn't have an entourage and learn the Dharma than with somebody with a big name, big title, and big house if I feel they don't have those three qualities. And those people, if those gurus don't have those three qualities, I don't see them. It doesn't mean they don't have it. Maybe I don't have affinity. It doesn't mean I can go running around saying nasty and ugly things about them either. We should never say ugly, nasty, and negative things about other Dharma centers, other teachers, and other gurus, whatever lineage, whoever they are. Whatever they want to get involved with, if it's ugly and nasty, they have their own karma to contend with. They have their own karma to deal with. We don't have to be the karma police. If we don't have any affinity with them, we don't have to say anything. We just keep quiet and we do our Dharma practice. That's what I feel. Every guru, every teacher, every lineage, every master has their own special practices, their own special lineage, and they have their own special people that they are karmically affiliated and affinity with from previous lives to teach it to. So if other people want to say nasty and ugly things about their teachers and students and lineages and practices, let it be their priority. We don't need to do that. Let them do that because that reflects their state of mind. They're insecure about their practice. They're insecure. They're worried. They don't know if they're on the right path. It isn't whether they're on the right path or not. They're worried. So we have compassion for them, we let them go. If it's suitable, we can tell them off nicely. If it's not suitable, we tell ourselves nicely, keep quiet. That's all. Now, when we come across such a guru, and you can go more specific, I'm not going to go more specific than it is in the 50 verses, because you guys are studying that, so I don't need to go verse by verse by verse. When you come across such a guru, I'm summarizing it for you. When you come across such a teacher, you should treasure them, you should value them, you should respect them. How do you treasure them? How do you value them? How do you respect them? How? Well, set them up in a big house, build a big temple for them, give them a lot of money, give them whatever they want, rub their backs all day. No, that's not how you respect your guru. That's not how you practice or have guru devotion. How you practice guru devotion is this, is everything that you've been assigned, you carry out. If you've been assigned to do a particular mantra or prayer, you carry it out. If you've been assigned to attend Dharma talks, you do it. If you've been assigned to do your sadhanas, you do it. If you've been assigned not to say harsh things to other people, you stop it. If you've been assigned not to get angry and get revenge on people, you do that. That's how you do guru devotion. Why? Guru devotion is not about finding or serving a weird control maniac on the outside from Tibet. Guru devotion is about finding yourself. And when you are humble towards your guru, you learn humility. If you can be humble with a person who's teaching you a spiritual path, you learn to be humble, full stop. When you learn to be humble, you find you have the ability to have that humility and you're able to extend it to others. And that is a counter for arrogance. And arrogance is a big, big cause for wars, unhappiness, and our own sufferings and arguments with people, our neighbors, our family, our lovers, our siblings, etc., etc. Arrogance. So to counter arrogance, when you sign up with a guru, you say, hey, you're my guru, you're my disciple, that's it. When you sign up, you make that seal. What the guru does is the first day is they start teaching you humility. You make three prostrations to the guru. You make three prostrations to the guru. The outer guru is you're making three prostrations. Yes, yes, yes. That's wonderful. But the real prostration you're making to is that person represents your inner guru, who you are on the inside. So when you make three prostrations to that guru on the outside, you're prostrating to yourself. Who are you prostrating to? The person you are inside. That good, wonderful, wholesome person that you will develop. So you are kowtowing and making yourself humble to that quality you have inside. The reason you kowtow to a guru is not some weird, exotic, Eastern practice. It's not that the guru is not going to teach you unless you prostrate. It is to teach yourself humility. The guru himself, when you prostrate, doesn't think, oh God, he's prostrating to me, I'm a great person. I don't think that. What I think is, oh my, I better have some holy objects around me so they're actually prostrating to the right thing. In this case, Lama Tsongkhapa. I don't ever think you're prostrating to me or I'm great. No. But the actual action of prostration, the very first step, is humility, countering arrogance, which is fueling the self-cherishing mind. If we can't say I'm sorry to my guru, who can we say I'm sorry to? The person who gives us the next business deal? The person who's going to sleep with us? The person who's going to give us a lot of compliments and good words? We can say I'm sorry to them very easily because we get something we want. That's not I'm sorry. What that is you're going deeper in away from yourself. The more you feed that type of mind, the more you go away from who you really are, the kind person. That's who you're really going away from. Every time you don't say I'm sorry to your teachers or to people who really have benefited you and you've hurt them, you go away from who you are. And that's the good person you are inside. And the further you go away, you can come back definitely, but time may run out. And if you go really far, you might get lost. And that's what I've learned in the past. That's what I've learned. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm explaining to you what I've gone through. So, the very first lesson in guru devotion is humility. You're prostrating to the guru in front of you, not to the person, to who you are inside. From today on, I adopt this teacher as my spiritual teacher, and the reason I do that is this person I find compassionate, skillful, and I can relate to this person, and he or she can convey the Dharma to me, and I want to use that to help myself to become better, to benefit others. Therefore, I prostrate to this person, who is physically a person, a man, tall, Tibetan, blah, 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 etc., etc., but actually embodies the holy Dharma, and the Dharma is pure wave. And I want to prostrate to that, and that's who I am. I'm prostrating to who I really am. That's why we prostrate. So don't think you're prostrating some weird Tibetan gurus. No. No, 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 no. And if the guru happens to be someone extremely holy and very realized, like His Holiness the Dalai Lama, along with prostrating to yourself, you're prostrating to a living bodhisattva, a living posa. Every time you prostrate to Kuan Yin Posa, every time you prostrate to Krishna, every time you prostrate to God, or you prostrate to Tsongkhapa, any time you prostrate to these holy beings, you're prostrating to them and making a connection to them. At the same time, you're prostrating to who you are to become like them, to find the God, the Jesus, the Buddha within you. And that's what we're doing. It's not about reciting a lot of mantras and going to a lot of initiations and Dharma talks and our gurus, His Holiness, His Eminence, His blah, blah, blah with big titles. hey, my guru is Tamrinji, the end. Sorry, that's all you get. It's ice cream with no frills. Someone, when you eat it, it's no fat one. How? It's one of those no fat yogurts, no flavor, no sugar, nothing. You eat it, that's it. That's Tamrinji. No blueberries, no nothing. It's not even from Nestle's. It's from the little old lady down the street who's got a farm, and she doesn't wash her hands. Yeah. Well, for me, that's fine, because I've had teachers that are humble in the sense of their title and rank. They're normal, ordinary monks. Sometimes they manifest as normal, ordinary laymen. But inside, I view them as a perfect living Buddha. For me, if I have a teacher that is a geshi from any of the monasteries, or if my teacher is His Holiness Dalai Lama, which I've received many lineages from him, I don't see a difference in my meditation. To me, they're both living Buddhas, and I merge them into one. So for me to follow the Dalai Lama and not follow him, that's political. If I follow him and I not follow Dalai Lama, that's political. What do? I merge it into one. In my meditations, they're all one. So, now, when we come across a guru, we take refuge with them. It's a small little ceremony. We say, we accept you as my teacher. Please guide me along the path to enlightenment. Once you've done that and you've said that, you're set. The bond is sealed. And you've got to follow your teacher. Before that happens, check him out. Make sure he's the right one. You can check him out. You can check him out for next week, next month, next few years without making that bond. No problem. Check him out. It's better to check him out for 12 years, clearly, than to immediately take refuge and become your guru and doubt him for the next 12 years. Check him out. So, yeah, but you may think, oh, I made a mistake and blah, blah, blah. Accident, but it's not a mistake. You have met this person through prayers and meditations and maybe a previous karmic affinity in your previous life. Nothing is an accident when it comes to spiritual practice. You don't just end up in a spiritual hall and sit there and listen. If you don't have karma, halfway through you leave. Or you get sick, or you become sleepy, or you get bored. Even at the beginning, you can't make it. People who have a lot of problems attending Dharma talk is a clear sign they're not doing their purification practices and their sadhanas and their practices. It's a clear sign. People who have a problem attending Dharma talk, attending to their guru, or doing things with their guru to serve, to spread the Dharma, and they have a lot of problems, they have a lot of excuses for that, it's a clear indication of broken samaya, which is not doing their sadhanas and practices. Very clear sign. It's a direct link. We're not going to look at people, be around people that remind us of what we're not doing. Very simple. People who do their commitments try to see or attend the teachings as much as they can. Why? They didn't do anything to avoid it. And they really know what they want. Their mind is focused. It's very clear. So, like that, on a personal basis, now we're going to talk about on a personal basis, requesting a teacher in a center and inter-center requests. We're going to talk about it. It's very easy and simple, and it's all going to be on tape, so you guys don't have to worry. On a personal basis of requesting teachings from our teacher, we find we need a certain practice. We want to find who we are. We want to improve ourselves. We want to collect merit. We want to purify our karma. We want to clear a particular obstacle. We want to clear a particular problem. We need protection from something. We have some danger. We have some difficulties. And we need advice and help from our teacher. The best motivation, of course, is for the sake of all sentient beings, I wish to practice Dharma to become a fully enlightened being. Therefore, I will engage in the practice of practicing Dharma. Therefore, I will request my teacher for the pure form of Sutra and Tantra. That is the best and ultimate motivation. Not all of us have. We meet our teachers because they have a certain need that we have. We need their particular style. We like their particular style. We have an affinity with them because we have that particular need for that style. That's why we meet our teachers. Sometimes we come across them. Sometimes they're introduced to us. Sometimes we read about them. And what happens? Our hair stands on end. We get excited. Or sometimes we're dragged to the teachings. We hate it. We just absolutely hate it. We can't take it. And we force ourselves. We go there. We listen. After a few boring months, maybe after a few boring years, we wake up and smell the coffee and say, hey, he's teaching me something good. Yes, some of us, it takes a few years to smell the coffee. You're waving it. You're pointing down their nostril. They can't smell it. Yes. Now, when you come across such a teacher and you realize you want to take some teachings, what you do is this. It is said the first time you meet your teacher, and do not take this wrong. Do not take this wrong. It is said the first time you meet your teacher, the more you offer is how much you will get in attainments back. So how much you offer is how much you'll get back. There have been cases of great masters in the past who had nothing to offer their teachers. There's the case of this great Dakini, Dakini is a female teacher, a female yogini, a great female teacher in India, and she had a male disciple to be, and he had nothing to offer her. And he came up and said, I don't have anything. And she said, well, you have to get gold. If you want the Dharma teachings from me, you have to get gold, she told him. So he ran around and worked for a while and got some gold and gave it to her and offered to her. The minute she got it, she rose up into the sky, threw the gold into the forest, and he looked at it with his mouth open. Like, there goes my gold that I worked really hard for. And said, okay, now I'll give you the Dharma teachings. And he's like, oh, okay. What is that expressing to you? They don't care about what you give them. It's not about that. And there are more people without financial means studying Dharma with their teachers than there are people with financial means. So people without financial means, you may think, what can I offer my guru? There's nothing I can offer. I can barely make ends meet myself. Why is he so greedy? These Tibetan gurus are always trying to get an offering. No. Offering is inner, outer, and secret again. Outer offering, yes, flowers, incense, maybe money, help, assistance, sponsorship. Yes, it's all those wonderful things. Thank you, etc., etc. Inner offering is offering your practice. Inner offering is when someone shouts at you, you don't shout back. Inner offering is when you have a sibling or a friend or a family member that gets on your nerves, you learn how to deal with it and become better and closer with them. Offering to your guru is arriving before your guru arrives during teachings. Making offering to your guru is when your husband nags you and he gets on your nerves and you know how he is, you have compassion and you deal with it. You deal with it the right way. You deal with it with, well, I picked him, I married him, it's my karma and I'm with him, and what's the option? Kill him, get rid of him, have an affair. Or practice Dharma. What am I trying to say? Deal with the situation compassionately with wisdom, and that's what Dharma gives you. Dharma doesn't take away your problems. Dharma doesn't take away suffering. Dharma doesn't do any of that. Dharma doesn't perform miracles. No religion does. What happens is it teaches you a method to deal with it, and when you have a new method to deal with it, it becomes like a miracle. It changes. Your life changes. So we need to understand that person. We need to know where they're coming from. What I'm talking about? Compassion. It changes your perspective. I know a different perspective about this person, so I change. That's the situation here. So, what happens is, a teacher teaches you that, explains that to you according to the laws and the truths of what Lord Buddha taught. And he gives you commentaries about that, hopefully from experience, based on the truth. So, when you want a particular Dharma teaching, how much you offer your guru is not a physical, financial thing. It can be, it cannot be. If you're in a capacity to help your guru to start, like in Tibet, they start temples and stuff, and they offer it to your guru so it can benefit many people to learn the Dharma. They do that. There are people that do that. But that doesn't mean that student will become enlightened next to the next student who can't do that. No. Another student who may not have capacity or financial means, they can say, hey, I may not see my guru because I travel around, but I'm going to do my sadhana and prayers every day. And what he's taught me and my vows, I'm going to hold it every single day, and I'm going to offer that to my guru. And I'm going to do it from my heart without showing off. That's an offering. That's the best offering. It's not about physicality. Then with that, you offer a kata. Kata is a Tibetan tradition of a white cloth representing your pure mind and your prayers. You actually make a prayer with the kata of what you wish to achieve, and you offer it to your guru, visualizing him one with the Buddha. If you happen to like Guru Rinpoche, fine. Guru Rinpoche and your guru is one. You like Lama Tsongkhapa, Lama Tsongkhapa and your guru is one. If you like Buddha Shakyamuni, fine. Whatever, etc., etc., so on, so on. If you like Tara, you think about your guru and Tara is one, but your guru doesn't have breasts and Tara does, well, that's your problem. Tara is a Buddha. You visualize your Buddha. Your guru is a Buddha. You don't think that he has breasts and Tara doesn't have... Tara has breasts, he doesn't have breasts. How do I visualize that? So is my guru a drag queen? Very disturbing. Anyways, you do not have to look back at our only one and only. You make illustrations to your guru. Three good paths from your heart. Guru might not know what you want. He might have to go and learn it himself. It could be like that too. But the point is to be patient, and in waiting and in getting the teachings, be patient. And the usual traditions request three times, not in one time. Can I have a three in one? Request you three times now. No, you get up, do it again, get up, do it again. I have a three times. Can I get it now? No. To request and humbly wait. Request and humbly wait. You can wait 5 years, 10 years, 12 years, 1 month, 1 day, 2 years. Relax. Kick back. Maybe he forgot. Maybe he didn't forget. If you think he forgot, too bad for you. Why would you want to hang around a guru that forgets? If you want to go that way, you want to go down that road, that's up to you. I choose to think I'm not ready, so I'm not getting it yet. So you offer, you make three prostrations, and you fold your hands. It's about adjusting yourself with the other person. And in this case, the Dharma and the Guru is a punching bag for you. He's being used as a punching bag because he puts up with all this stuff until you move to the next step. And some of you, some people don't move to the next step. Some of you go backwards, go down another step, and there's no steps to go back to. You adjust your time. You adjust who you are for the Dharma. Don't make Dharma adjust for you. Very simple. Never keep saying, don't have the Guru beg you, please this, please that, please that. Feel it's an honor you're getting Dharma. That's an offering to the Guru. You want to make offerings? That's an offering. Feel it's an honor you're getting the Dharma. Why? He doesn't get paid for this. He doesn't get anything out of it. Doesn't help his health. He's imparting to you 1,000, 2,000 years of knowledge for free, with love. Improve. Become better. The Guru is a place where you can see where your mind is becoming better, whether you're finding yourself or not. And then when you receive the teachings, on the actual day, you should be clean. You should be fresh. And some people say, oh, but I'm menstruating, all that's, oh, give it up. This is a natural phenomenon. Just because you're menstruating doesn't mean you're dirty. What's so dirty about that? We all come out of a woman. If women are dirty, we're dirty. The end. I don't believe in all that crap. Women can't go here, go there, all this stuff. I don't believe in none of that stuff. I don't like that stuff. And maybe there was a purpose for that in the past that certain religions taught that. I don't know about that, but it sure doesn't apply now. It never did apply, but, you know, for me, I don't believe in what's dirty. What's dirty is when you didn't wash your teeth, you didn't wash your face, you didn't comb your hair, and you don't respect the people around you. You show up sloppy, dirty, smelly, and people don't want to tell me. They say hello to you. Oh, hello. Get the hint. You smell. Take a bath. The end. That's Dharma. Be compassionate to people. Don't smell. Be nice to people. Brush your teeth. Look clean. Don't run to the Dharma place looking like some kind of hippie. This isn't a hippie hangout. Look clean. I mean, you don't have to go there in a cocktail dress, you know? Fishnets and a cocktail dress like some people, you know, slid up to the side, you can barely sit. No, be clean, be fresh, have respect for the Dharma. Why? You're showing respect to yourself. Very simple. And then when you attend teachings, sit alert, look alert. Don't ever have the teacher tell you to wake up or look alert. Be alert, look alert. No matter how tired and sleepy you are, push yourself. Why? Because when you push yourself, you develop the qualities to be able to push yourself. For anything in life, in any adversity in life, you can push yourself. So when the Guru demands things of you that are difficult and you push yourself and you do it, you're able to push yourself. Use that ability in other parts of your life. If you don't even learn that ability to push yourself, when we attended teachings, we didn't have drinks for 6 to 8 hours. We sat cross-legged. We couldn't sit in nice ways and comfortable ways. But you guys can. Why? This is not Tibet. So I bring the Dharma to you, not weird Dharmic practice, not weird Tibetan practices. What I'm saying to you is, that time it was torture to me. Now I realize what it's about. It's to make my mind malleable, to open it up, to make it accept adversity, to take a lot of samsara, take a lot of suffering and crap that I have to take from myself, from crap that I've created for myself, and crap that I've started for myself and it ended up somewhere else and came back to me. Every single crap that I experience in my life comes from me. And I realize that. And I'm a Rinpoche, and I still have to put up with all this crap. Alright? Then, you receive the teachings, you practice. Most important is you hold your vows. You follow the instructions of your teacher. Not when you feel like it, not when you're not sick, not when you're in the mood, not when you don't have a program on, not when you don't have an event on. You follow your teachers through thick and thin all the time. Hey, I heard Sam Rinpoche is running down Bukit Bintang completely naked, going up and down. Don't you want to come to my Dharma center? No, I've already made my association and my Guru does anything he's enlightened. Fabulous! Sam Rinpoche might be running up and down Bukit Bintang completely naked, you know, trying to pick up on weird people. Maybe he is. But the point is this, if you don't give up, it doesn't reflect your teacher, it reflects you. It shows who you are. Who are you? You are loyal, and you're developing loyalty. It shows who you are. That's what Guru devotion is about. It's not some weird fanatical practice to oversee any flaws that your teacher might have, and he doesn't have flaws, it's you, and he doesn't have flaws. No, your teacher may have flaws. But it's not about pointing out your teacher's flaws. It's about overseeing them and trying to transform your view. Because if you keep seeing flaws in the person who cares about you so much and gives you teachings, you'll see flaws about everyone. When you see flaws about everyone, the endlessness of the flaws will never stop. You become depressed. You never move on. You never become better. All you look for is flaws. It starts right back at home with your teacher. Don't look at the flaws he may or may not have. He may have the flaws, don't think it's a flaw. He doesn't have the flaw, you think it's a flaw, don't think it's a flaw. Why? Are you trying to ignore the flaw? No. You're trying to follow some weird guru? No. You're trying to overcome it. What we do is, when we see people, we immediately see something negative. We got to stop that. That's what creates the problems. Our delusions make us see other people's so-called delusions. They're this way, they're that way. No, they're not like that. They may be like that, but why don't we take on the leader role and transform them by example? Not by speech, by example. Some of us speak Dharma very well. Some of us talk Dharma very well. We don't practice. We don't practice, we don't practice what we preach. We write it well, we say it well, and we speak it well. But we don't practice, and we're a very bad walking example of what we teach. That is the degeneration of Dharma. Degeneration. Offer your teachers that. You can't go and clean his room? Fine. Clean the room inside your heart. Very simple. Very, very simple. So, after you receive the holy teachings from your teacher, you practice it. If you've given permission to pass it on, you may. If you have not been given permission, you don't run around begging for it. You don't run around advertising, you receive this from your teacher, receive this, that, that, this, that, that. Because it doesn't become a Dharma practice, it becomes another ego trip. I received this secret tantric practice from His Eminence, blah, blah, Rinpoche. And I am powerful, and I emit magic and sparks from the tips of my fingers. And if any of you try to challenge me, I receive secret initiation and teachings. Be careful. I am powerful. Crap. I don't believe in all that. I believe there are powerful teachers, but the minute you advertise, it shows you're not powerful. No teachers. Dalai Lama doesn't run around telling people, hey, I'm Avalokiteshvara. I don't hear high lamas running around telling people they're Amitabha, they're Buddhas, they're whatever. I hear widows telling me, you know, I'm an incarnation of God. I'm like, yeah, right. Me too. And my mother's Mother Mary, and I'm in the Immaculate Conception. Yeah, right. See how pure I am? No, I don't believe in that. It doesn't make sense. It's not logical. You guys are not animals. We teach you logic. So, it's very simple. When you receive the teachings, you practice. You practice, you do it daily till you get the results, and you do it well. And when you're ready for the next step, you get the next step, and you follow your teacher. And whenever you see your teacher, when you have time, you make offerings to collect merit. If you're not able to, you can make offerings on your altar, such as we've done here. Fresh water, fresh flowers, fresh incense, beautiful, to the altar to collect merit. It's a collection of merit. People say, I don't have money to offer. Water is very cheap. The cheapest bill I have that I ever get is water, $23 a month, no matter how much water I use. But I'm trying to save the planet because, you know, it's a small place and I can't leave it and I can't get out, so I've got to use it well. In any case, if you want to invite your teacher to a Dharma talk in a Dharma center, this is the correct procedure. You may go yourself and request the teachings, or you talk about it with the committee members, or you talk about it with a few members. You don't need their approval. You don't need them to acquiesce or say yes, yes, yes. What you do is you just ask them to join you to speak and to see if there's a benefit in this. Being with the center members, because you're going to be using the center's facilities. It's not to get their approval, it's to see whether it's something that will be beneficial to everyone that should be taught or not, or it's an individual basis. When everybody's in agreement, then you can go with your center members, you can go yourself, or they say it's all right. You offer kata. You offer offerings. It can be flowers, incense, can be whatever you like to make a beautiful offering to your gurus. Make three prostrations. And with humbleness, fold your hands. You can sit on a chair with humbleness. What are you folding your hands to? What are you making offerings to? To what you want to achieve. That's what it's really about. It's not about the person. Please don't ever think it's about the person. If any gurus or anyone tell you it's about the person and you make offerings to them and you collect a lot of merit, run. It's not about the person. Then you request with great humility, may you confer these teachings to us because it will benefit us. And you request, after you request, you don't run around and talk about it, advertise. You don't demand and push your teachers. You don't force and coerce or bribe. You wait for the right time. And when the teacher has accepted, Wonderful. When the teacher has accepted, you have the responsibility of being the sponsor of the teachings. And that's how teachings happens. Teachings cannot be taught unless there's someone requesting. The person requesting is what we call a sponsor. A sponsor is not necessarily someone that spends for everything. It is a person that's requesting for the teaching. So on that time, that sponsor, if they can, the best way would be, let's say that the Dharma talks is going to be, for a special set of teachings that they request, it's going to be, let's say, for 200 people. If the sponsors can, in Tibet, they offer tea and bread to everyone. Maybe the sponsors can offer water to everyone for the Dharma talk. That's very beautiful. Just because they want to share in the Dharma, they want to encourage people. They can sponsor the printing of the materials necessary for the Dharma talk. Make sure that the teacher has transport there. And that day, they offer the meal to the teacher. And then they arrange with the center member, if they're a member, with the other members, for the timing, advertisement if necessary. The financial cost behind it, for example, sometimes printing has to be done. Sometimes things have to be distributed. If it's an initiation, initiation items must be procured and bought. And if the sponsor is really, really generous, let's say we're giving a teaching on Tara, they can even buy, let's say 200 people come, they can buy 200 Tara tzatzas and offer to everyone with some water. It's beautiful. It's about sharing. It's about sharing the Dharma, making it a happy experience. And it is. It's not about money. If you can't do that, fine. You offer your heart. You tell everyone you requested for the teachings. My teacher, our teacher has consented, will teach us on this day. And you go there. You go there clean and fresh with a kata, with one flower. That's beautiful also, from the heart. And when you go for the Dharma teachings, you look alert. It doesn't matter how difficult your day was. Somebody else had a more difficult day. But no matter how difficult your day is, when you push yourself, you're able to push yourself. You're able to endure. If you're physically sick, that's a different story, of course. This is not a fanatical practice. And then that day, the sponsor, if possible, should go to the teacher's house and invite him, clean and pure, provide the transport. If that's not necessary because the teacher lives nearby and he has his own mode of transport, then you wait at the Dharma Center. You wait at the Dharma Center, outside of the center, with the kata and with incense, kata and flower in hand. And all the students should line the walkway at the Dharma Center if possible, all the way to the throne. And each person doesn't offer a kata for the teacher, and by the time he gets to the throne, he has an arm ache. No, everybody holds a kata as a offering of the mind, and the teacher walks past you and goes onto his throne and sits. The minute he sits on his throne, you make three prostrations to the throne. What is the throne? The throne is there to uplift the Dharma, to hold the knowledge of Dharma. It's sacred and holy. You're prostrating to the knowledge of the Dharma that the teacher has. And during Dharma talk, you do your best to control yourself. Don't fall asleep. It's very, very rude to fall asleep during a Dharma talk or during pujas. No matter how tired you are, it's very, very rude. Why? It shows that you don't push yourself towards some type of control of your own mind. That you just let your mind wander. Very, very rude. And you shouldn't pick your teeth, you shouldn't pick your body, you shouldn't scratch, you shouldn't itch, you shouldn't jerk yourself, you shouldn't massage yourself, you shouldn't move around. That says in the 50 verses of Guru Devotion. You shouldn't do all that. Why? It's very distracting for a teacher. Even as a lecturer in a university, to have someone sitting there picking their nose, scratching their armpits, smelling themselves, you know, falling asleep. It's normal, isn't it? It's not a fanatical practice. It's to show respect to yourself. Why? You're learning knowledge for yourself. So if you fall asleep during something that's helping you, or you look sleepy, or you can't stay alert, or you have weird body contortions, weird body actions, you're not paying attention, you're making noises, you're fidgeting around, it shows your total disrespect to who you are inside and that you are not learning and you're not becoming better. It's very simple. It's very logical. Oh God, you scratch yourself in Dharma teaching, you're going to Vajra hell. Please. You fell asleep during Dharma teaching, your guru scolded you, you're going to hell. No la. How can your guru send you to hell? How can scratching yourself and falling asleep send you to hell? Please. In that case, I tell you, hell is going to be overloaded. It's going to be like Hong Kong. No place to live. Tokyo and Hong Kong, for God's sakes. No. You don't go to hell if you fall asleep during teachings. You don't go to hell if you disrespect your teacher. You don't go to hell if you scream back at your teacher. You don't go to hell if you're mean to your teacher. You don't go to hell. But you go to hell because you're able to be mean to people who care and love you. And you do it again and again, more and more, and you can't control yourselves, and you hurt a lot of people, and that pain is what brings you to your hell. So don't think this is some weird practice, we made this Tibetan guru unhappy, I'm going to go to hell, uh-oh. No, 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 absolutely not. Absolutely not, impossible. How can making such little mistakes like that bring you to hell? No, I don't agree. But what it does, it brings you to your personal hell because you don't control yourself. You don't make yourself better. That's you, that's your mind. So this is not about some weird guru practice. No, I don't agree with that. I didn't see anywhere in the scriptures that I studied for 20 years that we have to grovel and serve and serve some weird fanatical psychosomatic weird, you know, psycho guru. You know, at the Bates Dharma Center. All right. And that's it. And then when the teacher actually gets on a throne and sits, then what you should do is, this has to be very organized. Immediately, we should have a chant master, umze. We have to appoint that in the center. And that goes round and round. That means all of us in the center has a responsibility to learn the prayers, if not by heart, at least chronologically where we are and what's going on. If we say to you, Guru Yoga, we say to you, Dada, like, you're like, huh, where are we, where are we? For the last 10 years, you're asking, where are we? There's only 10 sheets. Hello, wake up. Quit asking, where are you? Quit asking yourself that. You gotta start letting people know where they are, not keep asking people where you are. You've gotta move to the next level. And the next level. So don't attend Dharma class and Dharma places, you don't know where you are in the prayers, you're still blurred. Duh! Where are we? And the Dharma student is thinking, what a stupid. And then they're, oh here, let me show you. But what they're really thinking is, yeah. So we should have an umze that starts the prayers. Immediately, you make 3 prostrations. You start the prayers, refuge prayer, slow and beautiful. After that, in this center, we do the Guru, Lama Tsongkhapa Guru Yoga, Ganden Hwagyama. That's what I was taught in Tubden Dajiling by Geshe Tsurim Gyatsun. And then, after you do the Ganden Hwagyama, we do the Heart Sutra. Heart Sutra dispels negativity by the power of emptiness. After you do the Heart Sutra, then all of us offer a long mandala. While we are offering a long mandala, and we should have a mandala set, we should learn. Offering a long mandala, the sponsor and the committee of the center, that is the president, the secretary, or president, vice president, whatever, representative of the center should be there. With the sponsor and the representatives make 3 prostrations, and you offer up first the mandala offering, and they're reciting the mandala offering. This is the mandala offering representing the universe, representing wealth, everything beautiful, everything fabulous, everything that's great in this universe. We're offering to our teachers. We offer this to you in order to collect merit that we may receive the holy Dharma teachings. We've got to get a good sound system in here. We've really got to. Oh my God. All right. When we hold the mandala, we should hold it with a kata, kata. Da-da-da, a magic. 2 hands, we hold a kata, fold it. The kata folded out or in, it doesn't really matter. You know, some people like that. We receive the blessing because it's open, you know, I'm like. Never mind. Any way you like, you hold the kata like this, and you hold the mandala after you make the prostrations on your 2 hands. You take the tail and put it on your left. You put it on your left, and you hold it, and you recite the mandala offering, so you let them recite it. All right? While you're holding that, you offer the mandala, then you offer it to your guru. 1 person should be offering it. Another 2 people should be giving the items up. And another person should be on the side so the guru can give it to someone. You never let the teacher like, oh, who do I give it to now, you know? Throw it in the basket. What is it, basketball time? Offer the mandala first to the universe. The next, in order to achieve the body of the Buddha, you offer a Buddha image to your guru. Quick. The image can be bought by the sponsor and offered up and the guru to keep. That is the best. Because it's a little cheap, you know, keep using the same one over and over. I offer it to you, but he's got to give it back. I mean, if you're someone that's a member of the center permanently, once in a while buy a statue, offer blah blah. When you offer the statue, you point it, take it with the kata to your head, and then think everything embodied in the Buddha. May I achieve those qualities by offering the Buddha's body. And especially in the form of this Buddha Amitayas, may everyone in this planet, everyone have long life, health, and happiness. May we achieve indestructible body. I offer this to you. Then you touch it to your forehead with that kind of prayer. Turn it around and offer it to your teacher. Never give it to the, hey, teach here, give me a long life. Offer it to your teacher with 2 hands, let your teacher receive it. He will turn it around, touch it to his head, and pass it to the person. Receive, if it's for him to actually keep, which it should be, that's the normal way, but never mind. He puts it on the side. Then the next one should be body, speech, and mind. Keep that order. Body, speech, mind. Body, speech, and mind. At the beginning, it was offered wrong. Body, the next one is speech. Speech is embodied in the Dharma book. Then you offer a Dharma book. This is a Tibetan Dharma book. You can offer this one for symbology, or you can buy off actual ones or a whole bunch. When you offer your guru a whole bunch of Dharma books and statues, what is he going to do with it? You think he's going to store it up in his closet for a rainy day, you know? When he can't eat, he sells it off. Oops. Okay, and some gurus do that. Never mind. He'll probably give it away to other students. So you're collecting merit by sponsoring the Dharma. You offer the Dharma book up to your Dharma teacher and say, spread the word of Dharma. May I achieve Dharma. And then your teacher accepts it, puts it on the side. Then last but not least is the mind of the Buddha, body, speech, and mind. You offer a stupa, any shape. There's 8 types of stupas that you can offer. Doesn't matter. You offer clean, crystal, clear. Crystal doesn't mean it's actually clear. Crystal means the quality, pristine. To your guru, thinking, may I achieve the mind of the Holy Buddha and all its qualities. May I achieve it. I offer this to you, and by offering this to you, you're offering it to yourself. You're collecting the imprints and the merits to achieve the Buddha mind. Then you offer it to your guru with 2 hands, put it to your head, put it to the side. There should be someone there to receive, someone from the center. It must look organized. When the guru asks, where is this, where is that, where is this, it's a sign to buck up. Then, after that, the sponsor comes up and offers the kata to the teacher, and the teacher will offer the kata back as accepting to turn the wheel of Dharma. And this person, we dedicate the merits for them for sponsoring the Dharma teaching. And then that sponsor will also have another kata and offer it onto the throne of the teacher. To put on the throne, respect for the Dharma itself. And then while you're doing this, everybody else is reciting the long mandala offering. After you finish the long mandala offering, then we can offer the Tara prayers and then remain silent, make a good motivation, and start the Dharma talk. When you finish the Dharma talk, when you have finished the Dharma talk, again, the sponsor who has requested that teaching will do the same procedure, except this time, if you have a statue and all that to offer again, fine. If you don't, you use the center's one. No problem. This is not about money, please remember. It's a chance to make offerings. So you get up again, make 3 prostrations, and the students are all doing dedication prayers now. And I will have those prepared for you. You'll be doing dedication prayers, and in the dedication prayers, you make a mandala offering again. If you have time, long one. If no time, short one. During the mandala offerings, the sponsors do the same procedure again, except without offering a kata on the throne. Just to the guru returns it back. And then, if there's time, afterwards, after the dedication and mandala offerings, and everyone can come up with a kata to receive blessings of the guru, everyone should have a kata. If the guru keeps it, it's very auspicious. If he puts it back to you, it's very auspicious. It doesn't really matter. It's a sign that the blessings are there. It is believed that people who practice certain tantras and people who hold their vows or people who have compassion, if they touch an object, they bless it and make it energized. And when they put it on you, they pass that blessing and the instincts on you to achieve those qualities. That's why we offer a kata. It's a symbolism. So people who practice certain tantras very well. Vajrayogini, Hiruka, people who do certain practices like bodhicitta very well. People who hold their vows very well. They are very energized. And when they touch a certain thing with an intention and they put it back on you, they plant the seeds of that blessing onto you. Don't think you're in the presence of some normal person. If you treat that person like a normal person, you get the blessings of a normal person, which is zero. If you treat that person like someone wonderful, you will get wonderful things. How you treat is what you get. Then, when he puts it back on you, he's very pleased. Then your family members and your immediate people, and then of course the committee members and everybody else. If the guru's in a rush, he's got to run off because he's a super guru, he's got to run off for a catwalk session. Then, if there's no rush, then what we do in Tibet is, you take the kata, so you make a prayer, and you throw it to the front. Of course the kata is not very heavy. Don't get smart and put a rock in there. Then you throw your kata, of course it might hit the person in front, the person passes it up till it hits the front of the throne. So the front of the throne is just filled with white cotton balls of kata. It's a blessing. It's requesting the guru, thank you very much for the teachings. I offer you my prayers. I offer you my appreciation. I offer you my deep gratitude. And I offer you my promise that I will do my best to do your Dharma teaching and practice it to benefit others and myself. That's why I'm giving you this kata. And then you pass it up. If you have the time, you walk up, the teacher will put back to you and bless you. If you don't have the time, you throw it up at the throne. And the person will pass it up, so it's filled. Isn't that beautiful? Because in Tibet, some teachers gave teachings for thousands of people. If you got blessed every single one, geez. Can you imagine his tricep and bicep on one arm? Not possible. So there are different ways. Many, many ways. And what's horrible is some of our cheapskates, we use the same kata for the last 20 years. Get a new kata, for God's sakes. You ain't that poor. Don't offer dirty katas. Don't use katas to blow your nose, wipe your butt. Don't sneeze into them and offer your guru so your guru's like, oh God. Put that in a plastic bag. Be clean. Keep it well. Because it's prayers. The katas have 8 auspicious signs on those. 8 auspicious signs is what appeared when Lord Buddha gave his Dharma talk. When he gave his Dharma talk, 8 auspicious signs appeared in the skies because the gods manifested that. The devas manifested that to show their pleasure in the Dharma teachings being taught. So that's reflecting what happened at that time. Isn't that beautiful? Mongolians use blue katas. Tibetans use white katas. Malaysians, I don't know, you can use yellow katas, whatever you like. You don't have to use a kata. You can just give a big fat ang pao. You don't have to do this, but since we're in a Dharma center, some of the things are kind of neat we can retain of Tibetan culture. Not everything. You're not Tibetans. This is Malaysia. You don't have to do that. Just some things are kind of neat. It shows a physical prayer, so it's kind of fun. Kind of exotic. We went there, we offer kata. What's that, everybody? What's a kata? What's a kata? It's just a kata. Alright? And like I said, if you're in the back and the guru says something during the Dharma teaching, you think he's getting you, he's not getting you. He's trying to help you. And then when you finish that, after the Dharma center, you can go to your guru. Your guru splits, he disappears, or whatever. That's the procedure. If it's normal talk, you don't do that every single week. Oh my God. If it's a normal Dharma talk, and it's a weekly Dharma talk, and once in a while, and you're very close to your guru, it's not something official, then what you do is you still provide transport for your guru. You make sure he gets there. You know, you don't expect him to take a taxi there. Hi, guru. How you doing? Come on in. Take a seat. Give us a Dharma talk, and help me. I want to be enlightened. You don't do that. The representatives should be out there. If the top representative is not there, the next one. The next one's not there, nothing. And sometimes the top one says, hey, you guys take over. You learn. We need to learn this because, you know, it's not about making Tenrinchi fabulous and wonderful. We're going to meet great teachers in the future and we need to know what to do. We need to show the proper respects physically. And it's fun to learn. It's fun to do. It's nice to do. So, when the teacher leaves, then you guys do whatever you want. But in the Dharma center, you should do your best not to smoke. That's how you do it. And a center should, with the due respect, I don't mean this to be some kind of hint, the center should take care of the teacher. The center should financially take care of the teacher. And I'm saying this for the sake of the video, because there's going to be other people hearing this. The center should take care of the teacher to the best of their abilities. Make sure that he is comfortable, she is comfortable, that they have food, they have what they need, the necessities and the stuff, so they can come there to give a Dharma talk. If you can... Take care of your teacher well, take care of you take however it is, it doesn't matter, you take care of your teacher from your heart. From your heart. Definitely. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's not to say you have to raise billions of dollars to keep your teacher in comfort. No. And never encourage other people to give money. No. Encourage other people to hold their vows. Encourage other people to forgive. Encourage other people to practice the Dharma. Get close to their yidam. Encourage other people to respect others. Encourage children to respect their elders. Encourage Dharma students who are having a difficult time to help them, to give them love. That's what we should do in the Dharma center. Not look for money and look for material things. We need help. We need assistance. Yes, people like us, we've taken a loan to buy our center, and we need to pay the loan every month, and it's a big, big pressure. At the same time, having said that, but if we do our job right, donations and everything will come in without even thinking about it. The Dharma protectors will help us. The three jewels will bless us. I don't think we need to always cram down donations people's throats. Give me, give me, give me. No, that's not the right way. I've never done that. Most of you have known me more than 10 years. I don't do things like that, ever. I'm not interested in the money and donations. I'm interested in developing Dharma students who are kind, and it changes their lives to become wonderful people. And if we are compassionate and we're kind, and we welcome people, and we don't ram Buddhism down their throats, and we don't try to be, I'm holier than thou, and the people who are not holier than thou try to be holier than thou, and we do our job, and we're kind, we're nice, and the donations will come in. People will walk in there, and people who have money and who can help will say, hey, you guys are a great group. I want to help you. We don't have to open our mouths. And even still, we should check, is it time for them to help us or not? Because sometimes we don't want to associate with money. We want them to practice Dharma. And people who don't have money, they may say, hey, I have free time 3 times a week. What can I do? Some people say, hey, I can type out manuscripts. Some people say, can I come over to the center to sweep? Hey, before your teacher comes every week, can I have the job of turning on the aircon and airing out the place and whatever? People will come and do that because people are kind. People are nice. That's who you really are inside. And for the people who don't contribute and help in any way, shape, or form because they claim they don't have resources, they claim they don't have the time, they claim they're busy, and they make up excuses year after year, month after month, and they never contribute one iota to us, the center, or anyone or anybody else but themselves, don't focus on them. Move on. Let them be who they are as they are. Have compassion, pray for them, let them be. Because if they're like that, their karma comes to them. And you don't sit there and go, your karma comes to you. No, you don't lie in wait. Have compassion, let them go. Let them go that they don't do anything, they don't want to do anything for themselves at this time, but be there for them that when they're ready one day. That's all. That's all you can do. Make sure of that. Make sure the center is clean and ready. Make sure the ritual objects are there for the teachers. Things are carried in. It's a show of respect, not to the teacher per se. It's a show of respect to the Dharma. Then, when you want to invite teachers of other centers to your Dharma center, if you have a living Dharma teacher there or a spiritual director, you should, for whatever reasons, must get that teacher's permission. Not embarrass the teacher into a decision. Not force the teacher into a decision because you like that Dharma teacher. Or you think that that teacher will benefit. Perhaps they can. But since you have a Dharma teacher and a spiritual director, and listen to the title, Director of Spirituality, let him or her direct. If he says no for any reason, respect it. Don't spread it around. He doesn't like this, doesn't like that. He's this, this, blah, blah, blah. Because it just brings you away from who you are. It doesn't help. It creates segregation and bias. It creates prejudices and disharmony in the Dharma center. It's not necessary. If you want to invite another Dharma teacher, approach a Dharma teacher. If you want to go to another Dharma teacher, if you've taken refuge with the guru, you should definitely get his permission. If he says no for any reason, respect it. There's a good reason. Because if you feel your teacher's trying not to lose you or you're afraid you're going to doubt him or blah, 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 don't take him as your teacher in the first place. Check him out for 10 years, 5 years. Make sure he's not that type of person that's possessive. If you think your teacher is possessive, don't hook up with him. The end. If you think your teacher is compassionate and he's guiding you, maybe you're not ready for this teacher or that teacher or this teaching or that method, then respect it. You choose the path. You walk the way. Don't choose the path, walk the way, and then turn around and say, oh, no, I changed my mind. Because it reflects you, who you are. So if you want to respect another teacher, you want to invite another teacher, ask your teacher. And if you ask the other teacher, make sure that when he says yes, you are all ready. And if you say you're not ready, you've been in Dharma for more than 5 years, you don't know how to receive another teacher, you are not ready. If you receive another teacher and it becomes a circus bash, how? You offer the body, speech, and mind up wrong. You don't know how to invite them in. No transport, disorganized. You don't know how to do your prayers. Some of you have been here for more than 1-2 years. You didn't even memorize those prayers, and they're very short. You don't know where we are, what we're doing. You're confused. You're wandering around like thieves in a desert. What's the point? There's no point. If you want to invite another teacher, you better make sure that you are already in the center. Because you're not inviting him to your home. It's a Dharma center. So you must remember, you know the procedures and how to invite. And most important, you have the funding. If you want to invite the teacher, you must make sure that you share in the cost of their airplane ticket. If they're already sponsored by another Dharma center, or some costs defray their costs. You make sure you provide the transfer from their center to your center. You make sure that whatever you're going to advertise and teach is approved by their center. So you respect their center. So they respect you. And then you invite the teacher according to them. If they want to bring him, fine. If you want to go there as an emissary, and that's fine too. Respect the other center and their way of doing things. And when the teacher comes, exact same procedure. Exact same procedure. And if that teacher is your teacher's teacher, then you should have 2 thrones, one higher one for that visiting teacher, and then a lower throne for your personal teacher. because your teacher will want to show respect to his teacher. And if the other teacher is not your teacher's teacher, you can have two equal thrones. Or if that teacher is a very high teacher, an old eminent teacher, and your teacher is very humble, well, he's going to definitely make you sit on a smaller throne or maybe just on a chair to show humility toward that teacher. But after that teaching, if you think that, oh, that great teacher is so great and my teacher is nobody, see, he sits on a chair when that guy shows up, he's afraid to show himself up, see, then it's your problem. You pick the wrong teacher, you're stuck with it. If you want to think that way, you go down that road. But if you think that, oh my God, my teacher is so humble, it's like that, and in front of me, who I'm his student, he shows such humility, it shows me his qualities. And when it shows me that qualities, those are the qualities I want to develop. So when you want to invite a teacher from another center, you consult with your teacher, he must agree, and you consult with your committee members, they must agree, and don't have a cat fight over it. If some people say no, take a vote, no la, leave it. Make sure your center is physically, financially ready to defray some of the costs of the other teacher. You don't expect the other center to pay for everything, and then you get the benefits and none of the work. That's wrong. So if your center is developing in the middle of renovations or you're having financial difficulty, raise funds, you're trying to support your teacher who's so greedy and needs to be taken care of in luxury and style, I don't think it's time yet. So you have to think about the practicality behind it. It's not just so graceful. I invite this teacher to come and I teach, and I did it. And then you must make sure your committee member is ready. You have something. If their cost on the other side to bring the teacher is 10,000, make sure you have some percentage, at least 1 or 2,000 to defray their costs. I'm giving you a practical number here. And those of you in the audience who are not committee members, don't leave it to committee members to run around begging for money. Contribute. Come up and say, let's help, because you want the Dharma. Don't only be there when the sun is up. When the sun is down, you're gone. Be there through rain and sunshine. And then when the other teacher comes, make sure you know the procedures that we have just talked about. Make sure you know what to do. Make sure you know your prayers. Why? To show off, to show what a good teacher you are, and like parents showing their children off to the other parents? No. That you are ready for more Dharma teachings. That is it. And how to request the other teacher? You don't override their committee members unless you have a special relationship with their teacher. You respect the other center and you request them, is it all right or not? And if their schedule is very tight, you leave it, you say, never mind, thank you. You don't force it. And they say no, then you override them, you go to the teacher, send an email to his direct attendants or his people, and then get it, and then they come over here, and then their schedule is tight, and then they're forced to come over to our place, and then they're having difficulties. That's not Dharma. That's not Dharma when you upset the other center and doesn't create relationship and harmony with other people. And that's what we're trying to do. The very purpose of practicing Dharma is to create harmony and good relationship within ourselves, with us, and with other people, with us. That's the whole purpose. If we're not doing that, it's not Dharma. So why do something that's not dharmic? And we will go through the procedures again. We will learn those again. We need to know. Teacher, I rejoice and I say, I pray for your teacher's long life and that he may teach you the Dharma. I rejoice. I'm not going to tell them, hey, I'll come and teach you there. I'll come and teach when you guys are ready. You're trying to drop hints here. You're trying to collect students and angpaos. No, that does not happen. That does not happen in a Buddhist world. That happens in a non-Buddhist world. Non-Buddhist means people who practice Buddhism, but they're not really practicing. No, never. I would never invite myself to another Dharma center, never. If we do our part, if they request no, then we don't have to. But we need to know our part. The point here is not what they want or not want. The point is we need to be prepared. If we're prepared and they override it, fine. For some of us, it's better we don't do prostrations. We know we get asthma. If they don't want that, they override it. They say, please, no. But remember, in Tibetan societies like Chinese society, Chinese will say, oh, my food's not so good, you know. They're waiting for you to say, it is good. Then they'll say again, oh, my food's not so good, you know. It's not so, my house not so nice, you know. It's a hint for you to say, it's fabulous. That's Chinese. Tibetans too. Please don't. I'm not worthy of it. If you know the teacher well and you know that that's his style, like it's a Lama Yeshe kind of style, that they absolutely don't want it, fine. But if it's someone like His Holiness that's so humble, always says no, and then if you do it, he allows you because he's compassionate to allow you to collect merits, you do it. You check the situation. You look at the situation. But that means you need to be prepared anyhow. You need to be prepared. For me, when I visited Dharma centers in the past and people do this and that, sometimes I tell them don't, sometimes I let them, because sometimes they need to do it. They've done so many preparations, they've done it so well, if I say no, it hurts them. So I let them. And teachers like Gelag Rinpoche have wisdom. They will observe, they will know what to say and do. But we need to be prepared. That's the key word here. We need to be prepared. Very good question. Questions? Dharma is practicality. Think about that. Guru devotion is devotion to who you really are inside. If you're devoted to yourself, you'll be a good person and you'll be very good to other people. When you're nasty and mean to other people, it's a symptom that you're not happy. And if you're not happy, you're doing something wrong. You need Dharma. Very important. And listening to the Dharma gives us wisdom, gives us knowledge. Listening to the Dharma. Making effort for the Dharma shows enthusiastic perseverance. Practicing the Dharma shows effort. The more you listen to the Dharma, the more you must transform. And that transformation is not you give more money to the Dharma Center. The transformation must be you become kinder, nicer, and you forgive people that hurt you. And you don't give up on people who hurt you and disappoint you. And in our lives, we're going to come across people who hurt us and disappoint us and damage us. And there's two ways we can go about that. We can get them back or we can practice compassion. And according to Shantideva, we should practice compassion. We should wear the shoe that protects our feet from the thorns of the earth instead of sweeping the whole planet so that we don't step on any thorns. So Lord Shantideva, the great Indian Buddhist Pandita and master, said that. Similarly, instead of changing everybody around us and telling them off and controlling them and telling what they should and should not do, or projecting what we think they should and should not do and holding on to that projection and making them do what we want them to do, according to our way. And then if they don't do what we want them to do, we fight them and we tell them off and we hurt them. But we tell other people, but it's good for them what? Wrong. It's not good for them. It's good for us and we want it that way. That's why we're making them do it. And when they don't do it, we tell other people, it's good for them what? No. That's not Dharma. That's control. And we control when we're insecure. We're insecure when we didn't find ourselves inside. When we didn't find ourselves inside, we're insecure, we control, or we avoid. Two things we do. That's what the Dharma says. That's what psychology says. We avoid the certain situations that remind us of what we're supposed to do, or we control the situation of what we're not supposed to do. Those are the two methods that we can do. It's either up or down if we're in a pipe for a snake. That's logical. That's why Dharma can be logical, it can be philosophy, it can be religion, it can gain you spiritual heights. It can be anything you want. You can be a Buddhist, a Sikh, a Jew, a Hindu, a free thinker. You can be anything you want. Study Dharma, take anything out of it and apply it to your lives, and it's got benefit. And if you want to go to a Dharma center, you don't want to kowtow, you want to offer all these funny kathas to some weirdo from Tibet, you don't have to. Sit there respectfully on the seat and respect the other people who want to. No problem. You don't have to. And if you don't do it, it doesn't mean you're worse or you're not a good person. No. Why should you? Why should you kowtow to something you don't understand? And maybe you can kowtow in your own way, in your heart. Some people can sit on the chair and just fold their hands to respect the Dharma teacher. That's good enough. Just see the situation. Be logical. When we have the center, we'll have more and more Dharma talks. There's a lot of things I want to teach you guys. I'm sorry, share with you guys. Teach infers I'm a guru. Share infers tells you I'm a smuru. And I mean that. I am a smuru, not a guru. I am a smuru. But I am very happy to share all of this with you. I'm very happy to convey the Dharma to all of you. And I'll be very happy to teach and convey whatever I know in the future again and again, because if we know the Dharma and we transform our minds, all the outer problems will change. Will change, not disappear, change. And sometimes problems don't become problems. They give us strength to deal with bigger and better things. And we need to do that. So, yes.
Can I ask a question?
One guru is more than enough. When we've learned more than enough from that teacher, or the teacher has died or incapable of teaching us for any reason, that is not is from their side, they will direct us to the next guru, or a next guru will come and you will have the permission to learn. Then when you have learned everything from your teacher, you go on to the next teacher. That's what happens in Tibet. Because not all gurus are as qualified. But they definitely know more than you. And in certain situations, if you have to be a Dharma teacher, a teacher will encourage that Dharma teacher to take teachings from different teachers. depends on the need of the individual. My intention in this life was to start out with one guru. Somehow I got forced on the throne, dragged on there, beaten, and taken to initiate 120 initiations plus from 13 different gurus, and here I am. So if you want to end up like me, you know what to do. And the worst kind of people is people who center hop from one center to another to a center. One or two centers run here and there is okay. But when you center hop from one center to another center, another center, another center, another center, here, wherever the party is, you go there. That's not very good. Why? You're not focused. I'm not saying running here and there. A special lama comes and you go to another center. Can. Get the permission of the teacher. Can. But when you center hop 10 centers a week, it's a little ridiculous. If you really like to go to different centers, one or two, or it's within the same context of teachings that you're getting, it benefits you, why not? Why not? And sometimes I send my students or friends to other Dharma centers to listen to other Dharma teachers because it's within the context of what they need at that time. Definitely, definitely. Where there is no Dharma, let it be the Dharma. Where there's a misunderstanding of Dharma, may I clear it. May those difficult to tame, curb, and may those difficult to come to the Dharma, may I be the one to tame, curb, and accept their sufferings and problems. May I never give up on them. May I gain bodhicitta and realization shunyata. May I gain great compassion. In great compassion, may I forgive those who I perceive has hurt me. Whether they have hurt me or not is not the point, it's what I perceive. May I be a tremendous benefit to others. May I open my mind and be of tremendous, tremendous benefit to others. And if I am not any benefit, may I create zero harm to others. May I immediately investigate into my mind and find the faults and whatever is wrong. May I firmly face, confront it, and practice awareness and lessen it and make it nil. May His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama, great masters like Reverend Chen Ying in Taiwan, great leaders like we have in this country, and great people who serve and be of benefit to others, may they have long life, happiness, and may they have their works done without obstacles and problems. May we offer only benefits to others. May we offer only benefits to others. And whatever skillful means it takes, may we bring other people onto Dharma, the spiritual path of happiness. Naso jine sabi genwan di tandan joa kunlan kampan tan jeba jesun lozan jaba yi tenbi inbo rindu san shesho chanji sinjo rinpo ji majin pana jigi ji cheba neba meba yang goni gundu parwa sho toni towa rinpo ji majin pana jigi ji cheba neba meba yang Kone gondyu pewa sho, gewa di inu de da lama sanje dugyu ni, Jowa chikya malu pa di salam kumbara sho, Chujie jabo tsongha pa, chujie naba pewa, Kenjin shimwan shimwan dan, chenjin mabo tsongwan shim, Tadan jisim jewe dan, jewe lani di, Chewa lozan chapa, Tenpa yudin pan chujie.